Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
We live yet another day in the groundhog life, and I say good morning to one Chris Canty. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Dave. How you doing this morning?
Not too bad. I watched the Lion King TMZ special from Fox last night.
Tiger King. Not the Lion King. You watched the Tiger King.
I was like, what?
Yes, that is correct. Okay. I watched the Tiger King. You know, these people are nuts. They are just absolutely crazy people. It is unbelievable. Have you seen that thing yet?
Yeah, I actually checked it out last night myself. And just looking at Jeff Lowe and his wife and their babysitter, I'm trying to figure out, you know, who's the wife and who's the babysitter.
Yeah, it really is, and it
literally is a circus, and they're tigers too.
It is unbelievable. The one thing is, everyone is fully convinced, Rick, fully convinced that Carol Baskin killed her husband.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I haven't even seen it yet. I was watching Listen to Your Heart last night. I'm on board with that. I actually liked it, to be completely
honest.
That's a six
episode in and out kind of a thing, right? You're not committing a ton of time to it.
No, I'm not. I mean, this is not a huge commitment, and I actually like the fact that they're sprinkling music on top. So you're actually getting some, like, legitimate. Like, at one point last night, I looked at my wife. They had I'm not going to spoil for you, but one of the dates is, I mean, they went on a date and they had to, you know, sing a song together. And this guy sounded so unbelievable. I looked at my wife at one point. I said, did they record this? Because there's no way he sounds this good live. And she's like, no, this is probably live. It was amazing. It was amazing, and then there's just enough craziness too sprinkled in, so you'll like
it. Nice. Now, you recommend the show. You give it two thumbs up. You enjoy it, and you'd recommend it for other people?
Well, you know I love The Bachelor, period.
Yes.
Cassie loves The Bachelor, period. So this on top of it, and I love music, so on top of it now you have like really gifted musicians that play. I mean, one guy can play the piano unbelievable, one guy plays the piano and the guitar. I mean, they're sitting there staring, like, they're trying to get the rose, so the guy's like, you know, so desperate. He's like, oh, I wrote you this song. And he just whips out a guitar and just starts playing this unbelievable song. And she just, I mean, she just melts her. I mean, it's good. You'll like it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give it a try. All right. So it sounds like, guys, that the president is he's going to put together this commission of the, I guess, elite sports minds with Mark Cuban and Adam Silver and Bob Kraft and Jerry Jones and I guess they're going to have a call today to try to figure out a way to push sports forward. Here's the thing. It's very important for the president and for this regime and for sports, I believe, to get themselves back. Now, I don't know that anyone wants to risk anything as far as, you know, lives are concerned, but it seems that it is a very important task for this president, Chris, to get sports back up and running as soon as possible.
Well, I think the president is aware of how much sports is a part of our society. I mean, it's woven into the fabric of everything that we do. And so he recognizes, in terms of being able to signal to the public that things are moving in a positive direction, that we're getting on the other side of this pandemic, the return of sports would send that message to everybody loud and clear. So I think that's why they have so much urgency about trying to figure out a way, if there is one, about getting sports back to what we're used to, being able to get baseball underway, being able to finish the hockey season and the basketball season. Like, I think that's the motivation behind this. Now, we recognize that sports is not going to come back without the approval of Dr. Fauci and the top infectious disease experts in the country. But I think that he's going to try to get everybody together and see if they can devise a plan where we can get back to watching live sports.
Yeah, I mean, you've heard, I mean, and we've talked about this for the last couple of weeks. I mean, what would make the most sense, and again, it's all going to be dictated by, you know, what you're hearing from, you know, the federal government, what you're hearing for local governments, is finding, first and foremost, you know, places to have games. It seems like Arizona's on board. It seems like Florida's on board.
Yep.
And then trying to figure out, you know, the logistics of how you make that happen, how you keep your players safe, how you keep, you know, the trainer safe, the coach is safe. I mean, because it's one thing with the players too. I mean, you got a bunch of guys that are young guys in really good shape. But I mean, you got some older coaches, you got some older trainers. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people involved in putting on these games. You got referees. I mean, so there's a bunch of stuff that goes into it. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, they seem motivated to try to get sports jump started. But I mean, the last thing you would want to do at this point is, with all the good that we've done with a vast majority of people, you know, taking it upon themselves to stay home, to social distance, and us to start flattening the curve, that all of a sudden, because, you know, sports has signaled to us that it's now safe, we're going to restart the economy, and now all of a sudden we erase all the good that we've done because we decided to do it too soon.
And then we're in big trouble. I mean, if and when that happens, if we push forward and, you know, for argument's sake, baseball starts in, I don't know, mid-June and they're locked away, wherever it is, and you have a setback and you have someone that becomes ill from corona or, God forbid, passes away from corona, you're done. I think all the other sports will not be able to resume, and I think that you push it back a long time. So I'm all for it, and God knows that I want every sport to be back and as soon as possible, but I think you really, really have to be careful, Chris, of starting it at the right time when you really are in a position where you know that the worst thing that happens is someone's going to get sick but recover rather than anything, God forbid, happens and you lose the other sports moving forward.
Yeah, Dave, it's not something that you can allow a situation where it's running rampant through a sport that's trying to start back up. Like, you can't allow that to happen. And so, you know, listening to some of the remarks by Dr. Fauci and what he saw in terms of sports making a return this summer, he was saying that you have to isolate the players in a hotel and you have to make sure that you test those guys routinely to make sure that they're not transmitting the virus to one another and you're not, you know, exacerbating an already bad situation. So I think that whatever path forward that we're going to have with sports returning, it's going to have to lean on rapid, reliable testing, and it's going to have to be in coordination with the CDC and other top public health officials. Like, that's to me the starting point. And if you don't have the systems in place that are capable of doing that, then we don't even need to have this conversation.
So here's what Fauci said. He was on a Snapchat conversation with Peter Hamby. There's a way of doing it, he says. Nobody comes to the stadium. That's it. Nobody. No fans, guys. No fans. For at a minimum of the summer moving forward, put the players in big hotels wherever you want to play, keep them very well surveilled, have them tested every single week, and make sure they don't wind up infecting each other or their family, and just let them play the season out. So any idea that you have that, oh, I'm going to be sitting in Yankee Stadium in July and, I mean, 92 degrees, and that's not happening. I mean, Fauci said this morning, you are going to have fanless games for a very long time, Rick. And that's true.
No, that's true, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, I think the bottom line with all this and all these conversations that we're having and, you know, trying to be creative and everything else, it's all going to be dictated by us getting some answers. I think that's why, you know, you read the, you know, reports from Jeff Passan that Major League Baseball is participating in the, you know, coronavirus antibody study. I mean, you need answers to these questions. Like, if we have players that have already had it and built up antibodies, I mean, can they get it again? I mean, there are so many questions that need to be answered. You have to find a way, because I'm sure, you know, probably, and I feel comfortable saying this, a majority of all these athletes would sign up and risk whatever the risk is to go play and get paid and everything else, because, I mean, that's what they do. That's their job. They're probably itching to go play. But, I mean, there's some people, too, that have to, I mean, would be uncomfortable doing it. And you have to answer, I mean, you have to put their minds at ease that, you know, what they're signing up for couldn't potentially be fatal. That would be my biggest concern, is there's not enough answers. And who the hell knows how, you know, Dave Rothenberg responds to the coronavirus as opposed to how Chris Canty or Rick DiPietro respond to it. You could be perfectly healthy, but all of a sudden, you know, just because your blood type or whatever it is. I mean, every story you read, I mean, there's, you know, there's different information that you get, like, you know, some blood types are more susceptible or have a harder time, you know, dealing with the virus. So I think, I mean, just we're at a point. I appreciate everyone being motivated and all the different ideas going back and forth. But until we get more answers, more definitive answers, then we're in a holding pattern. You got to sit and wait and try to come up. My biggest thing would be try to come up with something that is feasible. You know, dot all your I's, cross all your T's. So the second you do feel comfortable, you can get this thing moving. Like, it's not like, okay, we got the go ahead. Now let's figure out what we're doing. As soon as you get the go ahead, everything has to be in place.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, how far are we away from that? I guess, is it golf that said June 11th, or I guess the rumors are surrounding golf that June 11th they're going to get back onto the course? I don't think it's the U.S. Open is going to take place then.
It's the Colonial.
The Colonial? Okay.
Down in Texas, yeah.
Okay. But whatever it is, I mean who cares? If it's a legitimate golf tournament, I think people, at this point, if I told you there's going to be 4 days of golf this weekend, I think we'd all be glued to it, right?
No, I think everybody would be locked into it. And earlier this week, I told you guys it felt like golf would be the first sport to come back just because of the nature of it. But in looking at it right now, Dave, I mean, we're desperate for live sports. But we recognize the situation that we're in as a country and all of the different precautions that we're taking to try to flatten the curve and get to the other side of this pandemic. I think the most important thing is exactly what Rick said. It's about trying to get information right now on the virus. We still don't have a vaccine. We still don't have a treatment protocol. We don't know why it affects certain people more harshly than others. So I think that trying to go on a fact-finding mission and gathering all of this information is going to be a part of assessing when we can see sports return, because I know the athletes want to come back. Ballers want a ball. But they also have to understand the risk that's associated with it. And unless you have the information, you can't understand the risk. So I think that's the most important thing. And seeing the study that baseball is going to do with all of their employees, I think that's baseball trying to be a part of the solution to our national problem. But it's also something that baseball can do to try to help them wrap their arms around what they're dealing with in terms of their employees and get a better idea of how to try to navigate a path forward.
Yeah, I think, I mean, so what makes a lot of professional athletes, most professional athletes great in what separates them from everybody else, I mean, why they get to that level is, I mean, they're willing to assume quite a bit of risk. I mean, whatever it is, as long as you have all the information, right? Like, I mean, that whole big scandal with, you know, the NFL and concussions. Everyone knew playing football was not great for your health.
Sure.
Like, you know, mm-hmm. bashing your head. But the fact, I mean, what
we didn't know was that bad, though.
Exactly right. But that's what pissed people off. No, but exactly right. Like, you're a grown man. You make your own decision. You just want the facts. Lay it out to me. Here's what could potentially happen, and let me make an educated decision. I think once we get to that point where you can have an educated decision, like, here's what could happen. If you get it, we can treat it. You'll be sick for whenever. You'll get through it. We can quarantine you. It's not going to spread to the team. Then you'll feel more comfortable making the decision to, you know, uproot yourself and go to Arizona or Florida or North Dakota for the NHL for however long it is, because you realize that America needs it, you need it, your family needs it, your league needs it. Like, and I was listening to the K Show yesterday. The semantics of, you know, essential business, I get it. You know, wrestling in Florida is not essential business. Professional sports isn't essential business. We got to get past that a little bit. I think what the president is saying, what Dr. Fauci is saying, because even Dr. Fauci wants to see his Washington Nationals play, is that there is, and I'll keep saying this, there is the mental health aspect of this. I'm telling you right now. I mean, could you imagine if you're stuck in your house right now, and God forbid, for an extended period of time, we lost the ability to watch television or use the internet?
Oh my God.
What do you think would happen?
I think people would have
nervous
breakdowns. Yeah. I think people
Nothing
completely
good.
Lose it.
Completely lose it. Like, it would be a complete mess. That's the reality of it. Like, there needs to be TV, the internet, whatever it is. I mean, hopefully people are reading books. There needs to be some distraction from, I mean, the reality that this is an unknown. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. There is nothing when you wake up in the morning to say, you know what, if I battle through two more weeks of this, if I find a way, well,
no, that would make it so much better.
No,
when you get sick, when you get sick and you feel like crap, and you go to the doctor, and the doctor's like, "All right, you have bronchitis or pneumonia, or strep throat, or whatever it is," he says, "But listen, you're going to take this medicine. You need to rest, stay in bed, and in 5 to 7 days, you're going to be feeling well enough that you can be up and you can be out." So all right, you know what? 5 days, I'm going to feel like terribly, and then I'm going to be able to get up and get out. Okay. So you know what? There's a light at the end of the tunnel. And you're exactly right, is what makes this so daunting, is because we're not sure, right? We don't know if it's going to be a month or 2 months, or if college football is going to be played in the fall, or if the NFL is going to start in front of fans, or we just don't know. And I think that right there, Rick, is what is so terrifying for so many people, because sports is always, always that thing where, all right, I had an awful day, I got sports. I didn't sleep well, I still got sports. I'm angry because of sports. And that has been ripped away from us, and I think people are absolutely desperate to get back to those feelings.
Yeah, why do you think when you go get your ACL, I mean, when you blow your ACL, whatever the surgery is, why do you think they give you a time frame? Why do they tell you once you have ACL, it's a 4 to 6 month recovery? Because they know mentally for you trying to deal with the rehab,
right.
What you have to do to get yourself right. If they just said, well, we don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, we'll just play it by ear. Well, that's going to be great for your mental when you have to sit there with.
It's terrible.
You know, you're sitting in a facility where you're doing, you know, leg raises for 2 hours. And you're like, oh, I don't know when this is going to end. No, you say 4 to 6 months and it gives you something to strive for. So now all of a sudden you're working, okay, you know, the harder I work, the more focused I am on the rehab. Maybe I can make it 4 months. Maybe it isn't 6 months. It just gives you that extra little something to get you through.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Having a definitive timeline does something in terms of your mentality. It gives you an objective. It allows you to create realistic expectations in terms of being able to figure out a way where you can get back to what you're used to. And I think we're looking for that in this country right now because we've been thrown out of our routine for a little over a month now. And we really don't have any end in sight in terms of when we can get back to some sense of normalcy. So I get why they have the urgency to get back to live sports because it is going to help in terms of the overall mental health and the psyche of our country. But there's also economic implications to sports coming back too, because everybody just thinks about the athletes, but you also have to think about the business of sports. And there are a lot of people in support roles in and around sports that you are struggling a little bit right now. And so being able to provide, you know, them with opportunities for employment, to get a check and to have some economic relief, that's a big part of this too. I mean, sports represents tens of billions of dollars in our economy. So there's a huge, huge economic implications that go along with getting sports started back up.
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-919-3776. But I think the one thing we all agree on, Rick, is that when sports does come back, and it will come back, there will be no fans for an extended period of time, right? We can all agree on that?
We can all agree on that.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing too, Dave, and this is something that we just touched on, I think one of the – I don't care what you're scared of. It could be anything. You know, I'm scared of Dolphins, whatever it is. Macy. No, but seriously, I mean, one of the scariest things for, I think, everybody is the fear of the unknown. Like when you don't know, like then that's what makes death so scary. Is because what does it mean? Is that just it?
No, we have no idea.
Is there something you have no idea, and you don't know what's coming for you. That's what makes it scary as hell. Just could
happen. Or what it is, right? I mean, you don't know what's on the other side. Is it just black forever? Do you go to some wonderful life? I mean, I think that's what makes it so terrifying. Is you don't know what's next, and it's the same thing with what we're living with right now. We do not know what is next.
Yeah, and it scares the hell out of people. It scares the hell out of me.
And it should. It's scary.
No, I've been witnessing this firsthand. I mean, I have a 5-year-old son. I'm sure your kids are dealing with the same thing. Like his mood over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, probably more than that, has been, I mean, he's been a little off. And a lot of it is doing with the fact he's so out of his routine, can't see his friends. Well, he did. The weird part is, and this is something that's happened with a couple kids in his class, is even just going on the computer and seeing his friends isn't good enough.
Mm.
Like he almost doesn't even want to see them because he realizes that he can't be around them and he can't wrap his head around it. Like he's having a hard time with it.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Rich Cimini, by the way, going to join us at 11 o'clock this morning. I got into a fight this morning with Ben because he's in seventh grade and they're not giving him any reading assignments. There's no reading. And I said, well, what have you been reading? He said, I haven't been reading at all. I said, you haven't read in weeks? He's like, no. I said, all right, so here's what we're going to do. I said, after my show today, we're going to pick out a book for you to read. That's not fair. I said, what do you mean it's not fair? He said, I'm not assigned reading. I said, yeah, no, I'm going to assign you reading. He said, well, that's completely unfair because nobody else has to do it. I said, well, you know what? These are strange times. And a book that you agree to, you're going to pick out after the show. So that's just the new normal, right? I mean, you have to do what you think is best for your kids.
Yeah, I mean, this is all uncharted territory for everybody. I mean, having to sit in homeschool your kids and, you know, try to get them to do, you know, do things that they don't necessarily want to do. No, and then listen, you got to reassert yourself. I mean, I don't care what your, you know, friends are doing. This is what I'm making the decision that this is what's in your best interest.
Yeah, and I'm not the best.
It's not always easy
at the asserting yourself and demanding things. So
yeah, but he'll respect you for it.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
You're supposed to be his dad. You're not always supposed to be his friend.
That's right.
Just pick, how about you? You know what you should do? Make a deal. Say, listen, you pick a book, and we'll both read it. Make it some kind of Giants book.
Why would I have to read? I've been through that.
Well, then you can talk about it. Now all of a sudden you got your own little book club, and because there's no sports, it gives you something to talk about.
It's not a bad idea. All right, let's go to Spike in Jersey. Spike, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, my friends. I like to check in on everybody at least once a week. You sound like it's getting to you, which it should. Rick, how would it be? What would you give for a good 3-hour and 20-minute commute? And Dave, you'd even watch a giant loss and not feel that bad. And Chris, if there were more branches in your backyard, I went through that yesterday. It's like we're looking for things to do. But again, I'm going to say it like I say it to everybody. You know I'm a supporter of the station 100%, and I appreciate it. I sure hope all you guys, I know you do, Rick, listen to the other programs, because it's just a blessing for all of us to fill the void. It's really tough. I'll tell you, it's really tough, but it's going to get better. I can reiterate that. I got a kick out of it yesterday with the banter between you and Gordon, you guys with Ozark. I won't say anything, Dave, but that, it's choices we have. I'd like to get a good book to read occasionally. Reading is a lost art now, a lost form of communication. And I heard Michael did something with Ryan Rucco on it's Yes, We're Here, I believe it's called, something like that. And Michael made the point that his wife Jody gets a curriculum because they go to public schools, and she has the burden of going through, I guess his kids are 5 and 7 or something like that. She has to teach 2 different curriculums. So we're all put out, but we have each other. And I don't think we should ever lose sight of that. I think it's wonderful what you guys are doing. And I just, again, hope everyone stays well. There's no way this is going to get fixed without some casualties. Maybe that's the wrong word, but I think that's the right word. Things will never be the same. But, boy, could we appreciate what I reiterated before to each one of you guys. That 3-hour and 20-minute commute and then 2 times in the bottle, Rip, you'll take it right now. Am I right?
Oh, I'd listen 3 times in the bottle if I had to.
Listen, stay well, boys, and don't underestimate what you're doing for so many of us. It doesn't go unnoticed. Have a good day.
Well, that's very nice. We appreciate it. I love Spike. And I know it's important. It's important that we have some semblance of normalcy for everyone to be able to deal with.
But I think Spike touched on one thing, Dave, and that's going to be something that's hard to come to grips with, but it might be our reality, is that we might never get back to what our society was like before coronavirus. We might not ever get back to that, but we wonder what those implications could mean for sports. How we consume sports, whether we're able to go to live sporting events, whether you're going to be able to go and pack 80,000 into a college football stadium. Like, we just have no idea about what it's going to look like on the other side and when that's going to happen. And to Rick's point earlier, because of all of these questions, I think it creates a level of anxiety. And what the president's trying to do, it feels like, is trying to alleviate some of the anxiety that we've all been dealing with because of this pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, you got to find ways to take some kind of positive out of it. I mean, what Spike was talking about, I think it's, I mean, how many times have we heard this in our business, too, as far as, you know, ratings and listeners and everything else? I mean, it has to, you have to make it a part of somebody's routine. We're all creatures of habit. And right now, I mean, our normal is so much different than we're used to that, I mean, it's tough to try to navigate through it. But you got to try to, I mean, try to take as many positives, whatever it ends up being. Come out of this better than when you went into it.
That's right. That's right. Well, whatever it is, and that's what I tell my kid, whatever the thing is that you want to get good at, or book you want to read, or miniseries you want to watch, or skill you want to have, or start baking, or any of those things, there's no reason right now that you shouldn't come out better at that than you went into this thing. And that's the positive you have to take about this, Chris.
No, you're absolutely right, Dave. You got to find a way to try to be constructive, try to be productive. I know we're going to be limited in the things that we can do, because we're supposed to be in our houses, but you got to be creative. You got to try to find ways to break up the monotony of your day. I think it's interesting what the NFL is trying to do with the virtual offseason and having 4 hours of meeting time and the opportunity to have guys work out virtually. Like, it's just, I think it's really interesting, but you're starting to see how these sports teams and these leagues are trying to be creative in terms of conducting business and still adhering to all of the ordinances and trying to be a part of the solution with this pandemic. So, I mean, it's a tough time. Everybody's dealing with it. We're in it together. But I think in terms of what they're trying to do now, what the president is trying to do in organizing this panel, I think it has to do with trying to communicate the right message to people that we're going to get back to some semblance of normalcy sooner as opposed to later.
I hope so. because there's times where you wake up and you're like, oh, when is this going to come back? Where are we? I mean, every day, just it takes forever. And if it's June 15th, it's going to be the day that we see stuff, then let's get to June 15th. I mean, we're desperate. We really are. And I know it sounds like such a selfish, foolish thing to say, Rick, but I'm desperate for sports to return. The longest I've ever had was after 9/11, where you knew that by 9/20 or 9/22 or 9/25 that you would have all your sports back. And right now it's just this empty void of when's it going to come back?
Yeah, sports and I think everything else, though. I think people everyone is just desperate to have their lives back. I mean, just to have, you know, all the things that maybe you took for granted, have those things back. Being able to just jump in your car, go to the grocery store or whatever it ends up being. You know, going to dinner with your friends. I mean, all the things that you take for granted. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, the saying exists that necessity is the mother of invention. Like, I mean, it changes hard, changes uncomfortable. But maybe something like this forces not only us, but these leagues to, you know, to be creative, to try new mm-hmm. things that actually, when we do get out of this, make the product better. You know, maybe it snaps some sense into Major League Baseball and, you know, guys being willing to pretty much do anything. Maybe it spawns some great ideas. Maybe guys are mic'd up. Maybe, like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe the NBA does start on Christmas now, from now on, because of this. Like, I mean, I guess that's for me what I choose to kind of focus
right.
on more.
I mean, you are. You're right. I mean, there's a chance that we get out of this and all of a sudden leagues have, because guys aren't going to fight it, you wouldn't think. Guys aren't going to complain. They're not going to run to the media. At least you wouldn't think. So mm-hmm. maybe there is a chance that good things happen. Like, as a result of this awful situation that we're dealing with, that there is a way to streamline a baseball game or make it go quicker or something. And that those are the positives that we take out of this and move forward. And, you know, maybe the baseball season is shortened. That makes it more competitive. Or the NBA, like you said, starts on Christmas Day or whatever the case may be. I believe there's going to be a good amount of that as we get out of this that we're in right now.
Well, I think it gives these leagues a natural opportunity to be innovative and to mm-hmm. experiment with their product and see ways that they could potentially improve it, because everybody's going to give them a pass. We all recognize that we're in an unprecedented time. Nobody has ever been through anything like this. So I think that everybody would be more understanding if you tried something and it didn't work out. I mean, we were critical of the horse challenge over the weekend that was broadcast by ESPN. But I mean, it's one of those things where you recognize they're trying something. Even though it didn't work, we applaud the effort because we recognize what they're trying to do. They're trying to provide some entertainment value. They're trying to give folks at home something to watch to be a distraction from the reality that we've been dealing with for the past month. So, like, this is an opportunity for those sports leagues. I hate to frame it that way, but that's what it is. It's a chance for them to tinker with their product and to see what ends up stinking, what ends up sticking, and some of the things that they could potentially implement in the future.
But here's the thing, Rick. How many chances do you ever get to tinker with the product where people are going to be like, oh, you know what? You got to give them a pass. Give them the benefit of the doubt because of a situation that you're dealing with.
Well, you don't.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't. I mean, how many times do we turn on the microphones and yell and scream about, you know, some of the things going on in the NFL or whatever the sport is that drive you crazy? And now maybe this is the opportunity where these leagues are forced to kind of reassess and make some tough changes that people want to see. Man, and here's the thing, though. I mean, the other thing, too, though, to take into account, and I know it seems so trivial to be talking about professional sports now when we're dealing with this pandemic and everything else, but I think Chris touched on an important point, is these are billion-dollar entities. This is big business, right? So we want everyone, especially with unemployment and everything else, I mean, what people are dealing with. You want, when we're through this, everyone to be taken care of. You want everyone to get their jobs back. Well, I mean, part of that, too, is making sure we don't put, you know, these big businesses, these leagues in a situation where they can't afford to hire people back. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of these teams are responsible for people making livings. So, I mean, when they get up and running and we can start, you know, eventually getting people back into stadiums and, you know, we got concession workers and parking attendants and everything else, people will start to get their jobs back. And I mean, it's part of the reality is, I mean, that did, sometimes when you read some of these stories about, you know, money getting kicked back to, you know, airlines or, you know, us trying to get games on and people want to, it's about money. Yeah, well, it is. It's about money for the owners. It's about money for the athletes, but it's also the money that they pay out to their employees as well.
Of course.
That need a living.
Of course. Of course it is. All right, guys. Everyday actions to help prevent the spread of the respiratory diseases. Here's what you can do. You can wash your hands. You can avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, and your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN. The NFL draft is 1 week away from tomorrow. You can watch it on ESPN television. You can listen to it right here on 98.7 ESPN. The NFL draft is right around the corner, and 98.7 ESPN is celebrating the return of football with the Draft Challenge. By correctly predicting the results of the first 11 picks, you can win 4 tickets to the Jets home opener, plus the jersey of the Jets first pick. To enter, text DRAFT to 44202, followed by your picks listed 1 through 11. We'll assign a point for every correct pick and 2 points for a correct Jets and Giants pick. If you think there's going to be a trade, just use the word trade for that pick. It's all from your home for the NFL Draft, 98.7 ESPN. And with that, we bring in our Jets reporter, Rich Cimini, here to 98.7. Rich, if you were playing the Draft Challenge and you had to fill in for the Jets at 11, assuming what the top 10 selections will be, who would you fill in for the Jets at number 11 right now?
Well, with the top 10, I mean, there's so many different versions.
Well, that's the challenge. That's the beauty of the challenge.
I'd say put me in for the best available offensive tackle. That's who I would put at 11 for the Jets.
So do you look at like an Andrew Thomas as a really realistic pick for the Jets at 11?
Yeah, I think Thomas is probably percentage-wise the most likely. At 11, it depends on your team, Dave, the Giants. I mean, are they going to, if they don't take a tackle, that's certainly going to help the Jets because it'll drop another one down to the Jets. So I think the Jets will get the third or fourth tackle off the board.
All right, Rich, let's just assume that the top 3 tackles are gone on their board, and whoever the fourth is, now they have to make a decision. Do you go with the fourth rated offensive tackle on your board or the number 1 wide receiver on your board? In your opinion, from what you're hearing, do you have any idea who the Jets view as their number 1 wide receiver?
No, you hear mixed opinions on that. I've heard all different versions of that. So the thing about this draft, guys, is it's like the ice cream flavors, you know, the old cliche, you know, everyone has a different favorite flavor. And it's the same thing with the offensive tackles. You know, Jordan Renan and I did a story this morning on ESPN.com. We talked to, I think, a dozen different scouts and personnel people. And I think there was each one ranked them differently in the tackles. And it's largely the same for wide receiver. I mean, I've heard the Jets really like Henry Ruggs III, but I've also, there's other reports that CeeDee Lamb is their guy. I really think they're probably going to go for an offensive tackle unless they trade down, which I think is a possibility. But I suspect they would go offensive tackle just because it's such a deep receiver draft and they could probably get a really good one in the second round.
Rich, I'm glad you referenced the article that you and Jordan did, because I was looking at something and the evaluation on Tristan Wirfs kind of stood out to me. Over the dozen evaluators that you talked to, none of them had a first place vote for Wirfs in terms of ranking the top 4 offensive tackles, but none of them had him as the fourth offensive tackle in this year's class. So to me, it feels like everybody seems to think that Wirfs might be the safest of the offensive tackles that are going to be drafted at the top of this year's draft. Is that the sense that you get from talking with the evaluators?
I think the safest from the guy, and I've talked to a half a dozen guys myself, I think the safest might be Jedrick Wills Jr. The words that keep on coming up when you ask about him are most pro-ready out of the group. Now, he's played right tackle for Alabama, and some people think he can play the left side. Some people can't. I think with all 4 of these guys, we're talking about 4 really good players. None of them are in the elite category, like a Joe Thomas or going way back, like an Orlando Pace. None of those guys are in that category, but they're all good players who started a bunch of games for big programs, you know, in big conferences. So I think with Wirfs, tremendous athlete, just a freakish athlete. I actually got to talk to him on the phone for about a half hour recently for a story. Great kid, articulate, smart. The one knock on him is, you know, they say he lacks a little bit of a nasty streak. He doesn't finish his blocks. Also, not great with his hands, can get a little overextended at times. Some people think he would be a better guard. But if he's there for the Jets at 11, I think that would be a solid pick for them.
Rich Cimini with us here, 98.7 ESPN. You mentioned in passing when you first jumped on here today, Rich, about potentially moving back in this draft. Is that realistic? Is that something that you really think that the Jets could do is move back in the first round, or do you expect him to stay at 11 overall?
I think it's definitely a possibility, Dave, because if you look at where Joe Douglas has come from, he's come from the Ravens and the Eagles in his background. In the last three drafts in Philadelphia, they made 10 trades total in the last three drafts. Now, Joe wasn't pulling the trigger on those trades. He was the guy who set the draft board and ran the college draft. It was Howie Roseman who was actually pulling the trigger. But he's been around that, and the same with Baltimore, with Ozzie Newsome, was a guy who liked to trade. So I think Joe is going to be open-minded on that. If he could trade down from 11 to 16, because there's a lot of talk that the Falcons want to come up, if he drops from 11 to 16, he could pick up an extra three and probably still get maybe not one of those four offensive tackles, but he could get an Austin Jackson from a USC or a Josh Jones from Houston at 16th spot and get an extra third-round pick. So I think he's going to be very open to that.
Rich Cimini joins us on the show. Rich, what you'd like to do and what you have the ability to do are two different things. Have you heard from whoever you've spoken to that because of the current circumstances with the virtual draft and everything else that we may not see as many trades or as much movement in this year's draft?
I think it's going to be harder for player trades. For instance, like a Trent Williams type trade, I think that would be something that would have to be done ahead of time, just because of the inability to give a player a physical. I think the draft picks, the draft pick swaps will be just as much as usual. I don't think that will be a huge hindrance because of the virtual draft. A lot of this is done ahead of time. Teams are talking, like in the days leading up to the draft, setting contingency plans. So I do think there will probably be as many draft pick swaps, but you may not see the player-type trades because there's more involved when you're dealing with a veteran player.
Rich, Mel Kiper was on earlier this week with Barton Kahn, and he mentioned something about the Jets. He said he'd be very surprised if they didn't walk away from this year's draft with three wide receivers. We know that's a huge need, offensive tackle as well, but they've also got other needs, edge rusher and cornerback. I was wondering if you could provide some insight as to the rest of the Jets' draft plan beyond the 11th overall pick.
Well, they need so many things. You just mentioned two of them on defense. I think this is going to be an offensive-heavy draft for the Jets, and I do think they will take multiple receivers. I don't think three is a lot, but I do think they could take two. I mean, let's look at it, Chris. Their receiving core right now is not good. I mean, they lost Robbie. We know that. I don't think it's the end of the world, but, Brashad Perryman is a starter right now for them. I don't know. I mean, to me, he's more of a situational receiver. I don't consider him a one or a two. They got Crowder in the slot, and then everything else is just throwing darts. So, yeah, I do think they'll take multiple receivers. They're looking for a young corner as well. And like every team in the league, they're looking for a young edge rusher, something that they haven't had in a while. But it's going to be really hard to find one of those. It's just not a great year beyond the first couple of guys. And so then they're just throwing darts in the middle rounds.
Rich Cimini covers the Jets for us here on 98.7 ESPN, joins us. In one way or the other, and you can flip it whichever way you choose, do you absolutely believe the Jets go wide receiver, offensive line? In either order, doesn't matter which one, but rounds one and two will be offensive line and wide receiver?
I mean, that's what I would say is most likely. I would say offensive line first and receiver second, but there are so many good receivers, Dave, that, the Jets have two third-round picks because of that wonderful trade they made with your team, the Giants.
Stop it. Why do you do that? I got to hear from him every day about, Leonard Williams, that was some trade. And I got to hear from you, too. I like you so much, Rich. Why would you do this?
Oh, man, I couldn't help myself. But, maybe Leonard, that's another story. But, they could get a receiver in the third round. Look, if they're sitting there in the second round and there's a corner that they really like at number 48, then, geez, that's a need. They could go in that direction as well. So I don't want to be, I don't want to, write it in ink that they're going to be, it's going to be receiver tackle in the first two rounds.
Rich Cimini joins us on the show. What do you got, Rich?
We haven't even talked about it. I was going to say they need a running back, too. you know, an heir apparent to Le'Veon, because Le'Veon will probably only play one more year. And I think in the third or fourth round, if they see if there's a running back that they really like, they could go in that direction too.
Rich, the question I want to ask you, and I know this could be just speculation, but I mean, I keep hearing it, and sometimes when there's smoke, there is fire. You know, any chance that Dallas does circle back and make an offer to the Jets for Jamal?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess there's a chance. I mean, they were interested before the trading deadline. I really don't think now that this story is far from over with Jamal and his contract. Obviously, he does not have a deal yet. It's been really quiet. When I asked Joe Douglas last week about that, he said that they basically haven't done anything on that because they've been so focused on the draft and free agency. Could they get a call from, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they get a call from Dallas before they, you know, before they draft and ask him about it. I just feel that the Jets, it would just take so much for them to part with Jamal. I think they really want to keep Jamal. And then once all this dust settles, maybe in the summertime they start picking up talks. You saw Christian McCaffrey, same draft, the first rounder from that draft to get a new deal, and I'm sure Jamal noted that. And they were drafted two places apart in the first round. So I'd be really surprised if the Jets do move him, but I would not be surprised if the Cowboys put a phone call in.
Rich, I don't know if you can speak to this or not, but you're as plugged into the Jets as anybody that covers pro football. So I'm going to ask you this question. Earlier this week, Todd McShay told Mike Greenberg on Get Up that Sam Darnold had more talent than any of the quarterbacks that he was evaluating in this class and any of the quarterbacks in the 2019 class. It was only a matter of whether or not he was going to be supported properly by the organization. Is that the sense that you get in talking to people in and around pro football about Sam Darnold and how good he is?
Yeah, I mean, I saw that when Todd said that. I mean, look, I think I haven't been asking a lot of quarterback questions to personnel people the last few days because, I mean, the Jets aren't going to draft a quarterback. But I think knowing what they would say, I mean, Joe Burrow is a better prospect coming out now than Sam was, you know, a couple of years ago. I think everyone would agree on that. I mean, Burrow's coming off one of the best, arguably the best college season ever. I would put Sam, you know, you got Kyler Murray in there too, who, you know, played well for the Arizona last year. I'd say Sam is somewhere in that group, like 2, 3, or 4, you know, Baker had a bad year last year, but you know, I still think he's got promise, and Sam is well regarded throughout the league. Don't get me wrong. People think he has a lot of talent, and people also agree that he doesn't have a great supporting cast. So that's Joe Douglas's job is to fix that part. But I don't think you could say he's the most talented quarterback. I would disagree with Todd on that one.
Ooh, I like that. A little animosity between McShay and Samini here.
Well, I mean, you know, like I said, I haven't been paying attention to quarterbacks too much this year, but that was my focus for like for 10 straight years until they drafted Darnold. So I've been out of the quarterback business the last couple of years. It's actually refreshing, but I think Burrow would be a higher rated prospect than Sam.
All right. Yannick Ngakoue or Jadeveon Clowney. We know the Jets, certainly are in the mix for needing someone to get to the quarterback. Either of those guys, any chance of either of those guys winding up with the Jets?
No, I don't see that at all. I mean, the Jets, their cap room is now an issue. They're down to about 12, I think maybe about 12 million in cap room. Ngakoue is a really good player. I know the Jets did make a phone call on him, you know, to his agent a long time ago, you know, weeks ago. And, you know, you're talking about a guy who's looking for $20 million a year, and you're looking for a team that is looking for at least a first-round pick as compensation, neither of which I think the Jets would satisfy. As for Clowney, I know they've called his agent at least once to check in. They're not going to pay $17 million for Jadeveon Clowney, which is what his asking price is. I mean, if he suddenly dropped it to $10 million, yeah, which I don't think will happen, then they would be interested, but not under the current circumstances.
All right. Rich, one more from me. Chris, you have anything else? Let me just throw my one more out there, and if you can
go ahead.
You can go with it. And that is, how are you dealing with this draft? I mean, this has got to be different for – I mean, we know it's different for the GMs. We know it's different for the commissioner. How is it different for you this year? I mean, it's got to be very different, I'd imagine.
Actually, no, Dave.
No?
I mean, it's a really good question. But the one thing, like the draft night, will be different because normally I would be at the Jets facility in Florham Park and dealing, face to face with the Jet decision makers after they make their picks. So we'll be doing that. I'll be sitting in my office like I am now, watching it on TV and writing from home. But up until now, there really hasn't been anything different because normally I would not even be at the Jet facility. I'd be doing what I've been doing, which is just working out of my home office. Football writers work remotely all the time from January through July. So for us, and this is a totally selfish point of view, it has not changed my job description at all the last few weeks. We've been doing conference calls, but like draft day will be different. But up until this point right now, it hasn't been different. I don't get to come into the studio, but you guys aren't even in the studio anyway, right?
So all by yourself, right? Like,
yeah, I wouldn't be missing you guys anyway. I miss coming into the studio and doing the podcast and seeing your friendly faces. But other than that, it really hasn't really been different for me at all.
Rich, and along those lines, this is a different offseason for everybody in the NFL. I know the NFL and the NFLPA agreed on the virtual offseason. Do you have any idea on how the Jets plan to implement that and what that's going to entail for the players?
Well, they don't start for a couple of weeks. So, it'll be virtual teaching, like I'm doing. I teach a course at Syracuse University online now, a sports writing class on Monday nights. And I guess Adam Gase will be doing what I've been doing the last couple of Mondays, is teaching a group of players on their Zoom classroom about certain, techniques, offense, talking about that stuff. So they'll miss the conditioning part. I do know this. The Jets have sent out, videos to the players for suggestions, recommendations on how to stay in shape at home, creative ways they can stay in shape if they don't have a home gym. I know they've done that stuff. And so once they get the go-ahead to start their off-season program, it's going to be virtual. And you'll see coaches, Zooming, with players and teaching, installing offense that way and defense.
Rich Samini joins us here on the show. Rich, last one for me. I know last year with the draft, Mike Maccagnan and his philosophy wasn't necessarily to include, or rely as heavily on the coaching staff and kind of kept the scouts separate. What does this essentially get as far as how much Adam Gase is going to be involved with Joe Douglas making these picks?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think Adam will definitely have input into it. I think the final say belongs to Joe Douglas, but knowing Joe and knowing his background, and I had an extensive conversation with Ozzie Newsome recently and how he did it, and I sense that he's Joe's mentor, and so I sense Joe will do it the same way. He's going to solicit input from a lot of people, scouts and coaches, and then make the final call. If Adam Gase truly objects about a player, if there's an offensive tackle at 11 that for some reason that Adam is just like, Joe, I don't want this guy for whatever reason, then I don't think Joe would make a pick defying his coach. I think he wants to create a consensus. And so, but ultimately it will be Joe's opinion and final say, but I think everyone will have some input.
All right, Rich, good stuff as always. We will talk to you next week as we really wind down towards the 2020 NFL draft. Stay safe, and we appreciate it as always.
Same to you guys. Thanks.
All right, good stuff. That, of course, is Rich Samini. A lot of stuff to chew on there. Real chance the Jets could move back in the first round, and I think that'd be interesting. I mean, if you could still wind up with the offensive lineman and an additional pick in later rounds, Rick, I think that's interesting.
Yeah, but you say the offensive lineman. I mean, yeah, it's great to get an offensive lineman, but, I mean, are you foregoing the opportunity to get the best available offensive line?
Well, for argument's sake, and of course we don't know how their big board looks, but if you love the kid from Houston or like the kid from Houston as much as you like the fourth offensive lineman, and say that's Andrew Thomas, right? Would you move back four or five spots to still be able to get the kid out of Houston and then gather picks later in the draft? I think it's an interesting idea.
No, it's an interesting idea, and I'm sure, they're having discussions about this probably right now as we speak, and I think the other thing to take into account too is, if you have the opportunity 11 to take, if it's CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy or Henry Ruggs, how much better are those three wide receivers than everyone else you have on your board at that position? Like, is there a huge disparity? Because if there is, then, wouldn't you rather take the best of the best?
Yes, but Yes, but Chris, I need to solidify my offensive line. And the fans of the world, it's fine. And maybe it's their upgrades, but I cannot put Sam Darnold in peril every single game. So you're right. I don't know the way the draft board looks, but what I know, Chris, is you have to improve this offensive line through this draft.
Well, you got to find a day one starter, Dave. I think that's what it ultimately comes down to, and you feel like you have a better chance of doing that in the top half of this year's first round as opposed to waiting. So, I mean, I know that a lot of these guys are guys that are going to have to develop, but you need somebody that you can trust to learn on the job. And to me, that means the Jets are taking an offensive tackle hella high water with that 11th overall pick. I don't see them trading back, and I don't see them going wide receiver. As great as I think it would be for Sam to have somebody like Jerry Jeudy, who they're calling the best route runner coming out of college in the last 20 years, I mean, you're going to have to find a way to be able to keep Sam upright. And to me, that means finding, whether it's Wills, Wirfs, Becton, or Thomas, it's finding the guy that would be the right fit for Adam Gase's offense. Because you don't trust Fant or you don't trust Edoga right now. You just don't.
Am I wrong? I mean, do you?
I don't, Dave, which is why I think they have to prioritize the offensive tackle position.
Yeah, because we talk about it all the time, Rick, when we talk about the Giants, and you've invested the 6th overall pick and the 2nd overall pick in skill position guys, a quarterback and a running back. Well, you're the Jets. You've invested the 3rd overall pick and a lot of money into a running back, and I think it's very important to improve this offensive line through this draft.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I'm surprised Rick said trade back. I understand. I mean, there are plenty of holes you need to fill, but the biggest hole Chris just mentions is, you know, finding someone that can solidify that line and can be a real difference maker to protect your young quarterback. I mean, if you want to believe what Todd McShay said and that, you know, Sam Darnold has all this talent that they're not exploiting yet, well, the best way to do that is to get an offensive lineman. I wouldn't be opposed, and this may sound crazy, to trading up as opposed to trading back. Like, if there's a guy, I mean, if there's one of these offensive linemen that you feel like, you know, this is the guy that we want, I wouldn't be opposed to trying to go up and get him.
I don't think that's crazy at all, especially when you have the additional 3rd-round pick. I don't think that's crazy. I mean, if you have a guy that you have a higher grade on than the other 3 tackles and he's available to where you would trade up to, then why not go get him? If that means that you solidify that offensive line, if you protect Sam Darnold's blind side, why wouldn't you do that? I mean, it's getting the insurance for your franchise quarterback.
Here's the other thing that I don't understand. If the phone rings, like let's just say, for instance, the phone rings at some point leading up to the draft, or maybe it's on draft day, and it's the Dallas Cowboys, and they offer you the 17th overall pick. First of all, I would have this conversation. I mean, today I would pick up the phone and have the conversation. If they're going to give you the 17th overall pick for Jamal Adams, how would you say no to that?
I don't know that you do.
I don't think you can. I mean, and then all of a sudden, then I think there's a real possibility that if you pick up the phone and call Jacksonville, I mean, they're looking for a 1st-round pick. Do they want the 1st-round pick this year, or do they want the 1st-round pick next year? Because if they want the 1st-round pick next year, and I plan on being a playoff team, and I can get Yannick Ngakoue, I mean, they just traded DeForest Buckner for the 13th overall pick. If I feel like I'm going to be middle to late 1st-round next year, because Jacksonville's trying to load up to go and get Trevor Lawrence if they have to. I mean, how do you not consider that either?
Well, here's the thing. If I could get from A to C like you're going, like do I love trading Adams? I don't love it. Do I like it trading for 17? Yeah, I'm okay with that. But if trading Adams means that I get Ngakoue, then I would absolutely move forward and do that.
No, what I'm saying is, yeah, I mean, that's not going A to C like that. What I'm saying is that if the potential exists where I can get the 17th overall pick for Jamal Adams, right? And I'm not going to have to pay him 17, 18 million bucks a year. I'm going to save that money, and I'm going to swap picks. I'm going to trade next year's 1st-round pick with Jacksonville for Ngakoue. So I'll take that 17. Now it's going to be 20 to sign Ngakoue. So now I have a 25-year-old pass rusher. I still have the 11th pick where I can address offensive line. And now I have the 17th pick where I can take a wide receiver. Forget it.
But here's the question, though. Do you trust that if the Jets have Ngakoue, have the 11th pick, have the 17th pick, that they're going to be a good – I mean, you've got to be a good football team. Because I know you don't trust Adam Gase, but you trust them enough.
I trust Greg Williams.
Okay.
With that defense, all of a sudden with Mosley coming back and you got Yannick Ngakoue to get after the quarterback, I feel all right about that.
Yeah.
But you have a really bad secondary. really bad secondary. I mean, listen, pass rusher is a lot more important than safety, no question about it. But I mean, that is a glaring hole in that defense.
Yeah, what happens though, Chris? What about this though? What if I throw this curveball at you? What if all of a sudden now at 17, I don't take the wide receiver? I wait till, you know, my second round pick and get, you know, Chase Claypool. Maybe with the 17th overall pick, I get C.J. Henderson and fill him in a corner.
I love the player. I love the player. Listen, man, I'm going to be honest with you. All of the possibilities that you're outlining are conversations that Joe Douglas and Adam Gase need to be having, because the Jets are at a point now where they've got to make sure that they're supporting their young quarterback the right way, and that means adding a lot of talent to this roster and finding creative ways to do it. So I'm not opposed to anything that you're suggesting, but a lot of these moves that you're talking about, we're not going to be able to find out until the team is actually on the clock on draft night. I think that's when we're going to start seeing some of these dominoes fall into place, whether or not Jamal Adams is traded, whether or not Yannick Ngakoue is traded. I think the likelihood that those moves happen is a lot higher a week from now when we start talking about teams actually being on the clock.
Well, we'll get to observations in a moment. Story from Dallas, and I'll let you guys kind of expound on this first, then I'll chime in about Dak Prescott. And I guess originally there was a report out there that he had a party of about 30 people, and he came out very, very upset and said that's not the case. It was about 10 or even under 10. So, you know, you played in the NFL. You kind of have an idea of the athlete, Chris. I'll let you start with your take on Dak Prescott. We'll hear from Stephen Jones in a minute on this as well.
Well, clearly Dak Prescott is wrong, but I mean, I just think that folks are a little bit unreasonable with their criticism of him, because you got to think about it, man. He's a single guy. You know, he doesn't have any kids. He's living out there in Texas, and everybody is told to shelter in place. So he's not, I mean, to expect him to be at home by himself with just looking at the four walls, I just don't think it's going to happen. So I understand that he was wrong, and he absolutely shouldn't have violated the ordinance. He shouldn't have had all of those people over at his house, even if it was just for a sit-down dinner. But at the same time, I think we have to all recognize that this is a tough circumstance, and Dak Prescott is not the only young professional athlete that's doing this. He's just the one that has the platform and that got caught on camera doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, Ezekiel Elliott was there too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand the criticism. I mean, again, it's me and Chris kind of joke about this all the time. You know, we'll start up a company, teach you the wrong thing the right way. Shouldn't do it. If you're going to do it, I mean, I don't understand why you need to broadcast it to everybody, why you need to take pictures of it and then post pictures and everything else. It's a bad look. Here's what I don't like, though, is the longer this thing goes on and as we start getting into the virtual OTAs and everything else, like, I don't understand why Dallas wants to put Dak Prescott in a situation where he has to be the bad guy, where they start to chip away at, you know, what he's built up as far as his reputation and his leadership. But I would imagine the last thing that Dak Prescott wants to do is be away from his teammates and not participate with what's going on here in the offseason.
Of course, and it makes him look bad too. I mean, it does. It's a bad look for him, and he's supposed to be a leader on this team. And I get what you both say, but I'm horrified is a strong word, but I'm really bothered by it. I mean, and I get he's a single guy, but I mean, the edict from everywhere is stay inside and don't socialize and don't have he's sticking his middle finger up at everybody and saying I don't that doesn't apply to me. I can basically do whatever I want. So I don't know. I mean, I guess we feel differently.
Well, he's not
about
the only
this.
One. Time out though. Here's the thing though. And again, this is who knows if there was 10 people. I mean, you look at the pictures. I can't tell how many people it is. He shouldn't be doing it. I mean, you could say the same thing about what Tua did with his, you know, his pro day video. I mean, was he supposed to have that? I mean, there's social distancing, but I mean, was he supposed to necessarily be doing that? I mean, Dak Prescott's not the only one doing these things.
Well, yeah, but to be out there on a field and to be having 10, I don't know, people over your house for a dinner party feels kind of differently, no?
So let me ask you a question, Dave. Is he supposed to be at home by himself for the entire month?
Yes.
That's what he's supposed to do.
Yes.
So nobody, no visitors, nobody in his home.
Well, yeah, in theory, yes.
In theory, yes, but from a practical standpoint, being pragmatic about it, is that reasonable to expect somebody to do that?
I'll tell you what, if he had Ezekiel Elliott coming over and the two of them were hanging out and playing PS4 and ordering pizza, and I it would be a lot easier for me to be able to tolerate than a guy having a party as this is going on.
I mean, the number of people, I guess, is the part of it that gets a little obscure, like you don't know exactly where to draw the line. I'm just trying to ask you the question to show people how unrealistic it is to expect this dude to be by himself for the entire month or however long we're supposed to be quarantined.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying it's not difficult.
I'm not saying he's not wrong. I didn't say that he's not wrong. But if you just think about it for a second, how realistic is it to expect him to be by himself this entire time we're supposed to be sheltering in place? That's the only, you know, I get that he's wrong. He shouldn't be doing that. And because he's the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, he's got this platform and he should be sending the right message, promoting what's in the best interest of public health. But I mean, we are talking about a young man with means and, you know, having a lot of downtime based on the current set of circumstances. So this is, it's not as easy as some people would think. Can you criticize him? Absolutely. I'm not saying that it's not warranted, but I just have a problem with people being overly critical.
All right, let's take a listen. Here's Cowboys GM Stephen Jones from 105.3, the Fan down in Dallas. Have you spoken with Dak and Zeke about appropriately socially distancing yourselves?
Yes, we certainly have communicated with Dak and Zeke, and I think they're certainly aware now of how sensitive these situations are. And I don't think, you'll be seeing that anymore. There's certainly guys that we have the utmost respect for, and I certainly know they understand the sensitivity of the situation we're in today. It's certainly very serious and something that we know, certainly know they understand.
It's a strange soundbite to me because you're telling me up until now, these guys had no understanding of the severity of the situation that we've been living under?
No, I think they do, but I think it speaks to, Dak Prescott's still the only one. I mean, how many times have we talked about, beaches being open, spring break and everything else. I mean, it is the mindset of, younger, healthy people is that, they're not the ones really at risk. And that's a hurdle that we've been trying to get over. I mean, it's a bad look because he got caught. I mean, the optics of it aren't great. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. And I just think of, to Chris's point, the practicality of Dak Prescott, being a single guy staying in his house by himself are probably a little bit unreasonable.
Yeah, it probably is. It probably is. All right, let's move along, and it is now time for Nobservations.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Nobservations.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, fellas, let's start with some good stories. We'll start with the NHL, because you know how much I love the NHL. We'd be actually in the first round of the playoffs in the NHL right now.
Don't do that to us.
I know. Okay, if you're going to start with the playoffs, I mean, the fact is we're only in the first round of the playoffs. So, I mean, there still is. I mean, fingers crossed, there still is time.
We got time.
The Nashville Predators have raised $2.7 million to help with both tornado and COVID-19 relief. Which is pretty awesome.
Because COVID-19 isn't enough. We got to give them a tornado, too, huh? Unbelievable.
Well, they had that tornado, too.
Right? I know. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. 2020 has not been a good year.
No, terrible.
And we're only in April.
What did you say? $2.7 million?
$2.7 million, my man.
Wow. That is terrific.
Yeah, you had players involved, too. I mean, Roman Josi, who's the captain, he gave $20,000 to Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee and another $20,000 to a local homeless ministry. So $40,000. Quinnen Williams. No relation to Giants Leonard Williams.
Go ahead. It's not funny. You know what?
I apologize.
Sometimes you can overplay a joke. That's where you are. You are living in the overplayed this joke now.
Thank you, Santiago. Quinnen Williams came up with a plan to note he's going to donate $25,000 worth of healthy meals to medical professionals on the front line every week. The first donation went to healthcare workers at Morristown Medical Center, which is near the Jets facility. And if you get a chance to read the story, the meal is actually served. And on the front of it, it's a picture of Quinnen Williams. And it says, thank you for your service. Love, Quinnen Williams, New York Jets.
Good for him.
Cool.
Yeah,
good on him for doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, 22-year-old
great
kid.
On him.
Yep. It's awesome. Here we go. Did this happen in Florida? You guys ready for this?
We're ready.
Let's do it.
So we have a woman. She is a blonde woman that decided after a court appearance for violating the stay-at-home mandate, what would she do when she was done with this court appearance? Would she just, you know, go home? Would she catch a cab? No, no. What she would do is she would get completely naked and jump on top of a police car. The woman stripped down and hopped on top of a cruiser after being released on bail and decided that she was going to just flail around butt naked on the top of a police car. Okay. Did that happen in FLA?
No. I don't, that doesn't have a Florida, it doesn't have a Florida feel to it. I'm gonna say that's I'm not kind of hesitant with this. That's an emphatic no.
Wow, emphatic.
An emphatic no, yes.
You got nudity and the police involved. And
yeah, it doesn't feel like that's Florida.
Interesting. What about you, Canty?
Well, I mean, Dave is so strong in his stance. I feel like I have no choice but to agree with him and to say that it's not Florida.
Wow. Santiago.
Boy, I was going to say maybe Florida, but now you two have me doubting.
Listen, I don't want to stand in your way if you believe that's a Florida story.
No, you're so vehement against it. I don't think I can go with it. I got to go non-Florida.
Vehement.
I always get that one wrong.
Yeah, it's okay.
What if I told you the woman got, you know, something stuck in the sunroof of the police vehicle? Would you say Florida then?
Did she?
No, she didn't. I wish she did, though. That would have been a better story.
I was about to say, police vehicles have sunroofs?
Yeah.
I don't know. This one may have.
Exactly.
In Florida?
It was a convertible. No, this happened in Spain. This was Spain.
Spain!
Where the woman decided. Yeah, this
nicely
was Spain.
Done, Dave. It's
That's
not even
right.
A domestic story.
There was no way that was Florida.
And Dave is on fire. And by the way, could you do me a favor? I'm dying to talk to Canty about Ozarks. I mean, I have a bunch of different points I'd like to make. Can you watch it, please?
Now, here's my question to you. You want to be frustrated with me? That's fine. You couldn't call Canty and have this conversation off air? I mean, why does it have to be with me present? Or you know what? You can have 5 minutes. I will dial out of the show and I will pop back in when you guys are done with that conversation.
Well, Dave, I think the point is that he wants Gordon Damer to hear it just because Gordon was so critical of the show.
Exactly right. Thank you, Chris. And I like to do it as a show. We're a family, a show unit. I mean,
well, I'm not there yet. If you want to wait for me, then wait for me. Otherwise, do it tomorrow, and I will take my headphones off for a good 5 minutes, and you guys can have this back and forth about Bateman and Ozarks and Laura Linney and all the stuff you need, and then I will pop back in when that conversation is done.
This quarantine schedule is very busy, Rick. Very busy.
Yeah, no, we'll wait. No, we'll wait. That's fine. I mean, you make me want it. That's fine. Did you guys get a chance to see this story about Snacks Harrison? I love this.
Yes.
This is actually hilarious. And my favorite part of the story. So he had no interest in going to Detroit. No, zero. Like at a point in the story, he said he came to camp in shape, but during the first 3 weeks of camp, he actually worked himself out of shape because he wasn't doing anything. Here's the favorite part of the story. to be completely honest with you, I didn't want to go to Detroit because of some of the things that I heard from some of the guys in the past, some guys who were there, Snack said. So when I got the call that that's where I was traded, I didn't answer the phone for a couple hours. Lions general manager Bob Quinn was calling me and I didn't pick up the phone because I was trying to figure out a way to get out of it. You got the GM calling for hours and he's trying to figure out an escape plan.
That's funny.
If I don't answer, maybe this won't actually happen.
Where would you rather go and play football? Cleveland, Cincinnati, or Detroit?
Currently, I would say Cleveland probably. You got new unis. I mean, you got a good team. I'd probably say Cleveland.
Yeah, I would go Cleveland too.
All right. Where would you rather go? Detroit or Cincinnati?
And you got Michael Simon's restaurants. Wow, Detroit.
So you don't want any part of Cincinnati?
Yeah, I'm also with Cincinnati.
You know, here's the thing about that story with Snacks, Rick. I hear what he's saying about him not wanting to leave the Giants and go up there, but I also saw the emotion on his face when he was being cut this past February. So, I mean, could it have been all that bad if he was that emotional about them releasing him?
No, I just think I think for him the initial shock and all the things that he heard about Detroit was probably why he didn't want to go. But I think that changes. I mean, even if you don't like the coach, you make relationships with your teammates. I would be sad too. You know what I mean? Like even if you hated the place,
yeah.
I'm sure you like your teammates, mm-hmm. So you're sad to go.
Yeah.
Here we go. How much time? I only got one more minute left here. Last one for today. I got a good Shaq story. I'll save it tomorrow. But you guys, Dave, you'll love this. So you know how when I had when Cassie and I had Milo, I left the hospital without naming Milo. It was a huge ordeal. Huge. Like the woman was heated. Like she almost wanted to name Milo for us. I said, no, I'll name him when I decide I want to name him. So you know the comedian Amy Schumer? Have you seen the story yet?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, so Amy Schumer and her husband had a baby boy 11 months ago, okay? And initially when they had their son, they wanted to do something special for one of the comedians that Amy Schumer really loves and respects, who was Dave Attell.
Okay.
Would you care? So Amy Schumer's husband's last name is Fisher. So the middle name was going to be, or was, Attell. So it was blank Attell Fisher. Would you care to guess what they named, what the baby's first name was?
Blank Attell Fisher.
Yeah. Interesting when you put the first name with the middle name and you say it as the entirety of the name.
I'm at a loss here. Chris, do you have any idea?
No clue.
It was Gene. Gene Attell.
Wow. Come on, man. Fisher. Got to be more careful.
But here's the thing. Do you think the normal person hears that and thinks that's strange? Or do you think that's in your mind that you hear that and right away you're shocked by it?
No, this was actually, she changed it. They've officially changed the name. I mean, the name is now Gene David Fisher. And it's funny because she revealed this on the podcast. And so Claudia O'Doherty, who's on the podcast with her, is a friend of hers. She actually says, my mom pointed that out to me, actually. My mom was like, Amy called her son genital. And I was like, oh, what are you?
Wow.
So it's not just us. Other people realized.
Genital.
I mean, do they not think of this when they're naming their kids that? I mean, I'm just saying. The kids got to live with that for the rest of their lives.
We had the conversation about Chris Christopherson the other day.
Yeah, they panicked. The Christophersons panicked.
Are you sure you don't want it to be Chris, Mrs. Christopherson? All right, sure. Just put that down there.
Just put it down. That sounds easy.
Oh, God. Chris Christopherson.
And there you have it, boys. That is a hump day edition of Knob Observations.
DiPietro, Kathy, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.